This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez on this Thursday, August 13th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining us. Heard the Royals there. Some highlights from the game last night and some comments from manager Mike Matheny. After the Royals get the win against the Reds, another nail-biter. This time the Royals come out ahead by one run and win it 5-3. And, again, it was a nerve-wracking game there at the end.
How about those Royals, huh?
The Royals get it done behind the continued hot hitting of Salvador Perez, who went 3-for-5 last night. With a couple of runs scored and three ribbies, Salvi now hitting .329 on the season with a .557 slug. And so Salvi hitting very, very well after missing Salvi all of last year. He has returned.
Thank you, my friend.
Better than ever. This version of Salvador Perez is, he's hitting the cover off the ball. Looks great at the plate. Last night with a double, with his fourth home run of the year. He's got 12 ribbies now. And so, again, good performance of the plate from Salvador Perez.
Thank you, my friend.
Brad Keller, another guy that the Royals were missing. They were missing him in summer camp and then in the early part of the season when they were struggling so much. Brad Keller, again, shows his importance and hopefully shows his development as a pitcher. As he wins his second game, and he goes six strong innings, throws 90 pitches, doesn't give up any runs, only two hits and three walks, along with three strikeouts. So six shutout innings from Brad Keller last night, and he still hasn't given up a run on the season. He gives up Ian Kennedy, who did not get an out last night. So two opposite approaches. Brad Keller pitches six innings, doesn't give up any runs. Ian Kennedy doesn't pitch any innings and gives up three runs, and he looks... He does not look good on the mound, but he made it. He made it interesting for the Reds, and then Barlow gave up a run before Josh Staumont was able to navigate his way around a hit and a walk, and still strike out the side all on curveballs and get the job done before passing the baton to Trevor Rosenthal, and that also was that was a tightrope that he walked. Three walks in that inning. The bases were loaded, and he was able to get a double play out of Christian Colon, our old friend Christian Colon. Who thought that Christian Colon was going to come through with a hit there and make us feel bad after he made us feel so good when he came up through with that huge clutch hit in the World Series a few years ago? Did you feel like Christian Colon was going to come through last night at the plate with the bases loaded and the game on the line?
I did. I thought he might have some kind of broken bat, little single, something like that. I didn't think things were going to go well for the Royals at that time.
Yeah, I just, when you're walking the bases loaded,
yeah,
you're asking for it. You're just absolutely asking for it. Oh, yeah, this is the way that this another frustrating loss is going to happen in Cincinnati. Rosenthal walks the bases loaded, and then he's going to give up the game-winning hit, of all people, Christian Colon. But it didn't happen. Colon grounds to do a double play, and that was all she wrote. You're not going to see too many times a reliever, especially a closer, get away with walking three guys in one inning and not giving up any runs and still getting the save. The Trevor Rosenthal. And look, Staumont and Rosenthal, I mean, in their two innings, they combined for a hit and four walks, but they didn't give up any runs. And so they were certainly flirting with disaster last night, but they were able to avoid giving up any runs, and they end up getting the win as the Royals win 5-4 And that, look, that was an important win because that would have been, I mean, that would have been tough if you'd have lost back-to-back games in heartbreaking fashion like that to the Reds. Now they even the series, and you feel really, really good coming out of it, not only because they won, because of Brad Keller's performance. And I'll go back to something we talked about with Mike Boddicker, and we've been talking about the last week or so since Brad Keller returned. This is a young pitcher that doesn't get mentioned with these group of young arms that the Royals have because he's not a prospect, he's not a rookie, but he still needs to be mentioned as far as being a building block for this baseball team moving forward, because he's damn good and he's underrated for how solid he's been since he's come up. In 140 innings his first year, he had a 3.08 ERA, you know, and a 1.304 whip. That's terrific for a rookie. His second year, he had a bad record, but we know record is not very good indicator of how good a pitcher is. And his rookie year was really good. Statistically, his second year was somewhat of a step back because he had a 4.19 ERA, but still, if you had a 23-year-old starting pitcher that came up and posted a 4.19 ERA in 165 innings and continued to show promise, you'd feel pretty good about it. But the expectations were raised so much from the rookie year, it felt like it was a big disappointment for him last year. And then he comes back this year and is off to just a tremendous start, like I said, not giving up any runs in his first 11 innings. And so I just feel like Brad Keller needs to be mentioned more when we talk about the possibilities of this team being able to put together a stellar starting rotation and really be able to load up on pitching, young pitching, with either a chance to keep them all and develop a hell of a staff, or if you get an excess of starting pitching that's going to be ready to deliver at the major league level, or close, or prospects that their development is coming along very well, then you've got some real ammunition if you need to go out and make a trade or two to fill holes in other spots in the roster. And again, Brad Keller just turned 25 on July 27th. So he just turned 25, and now this kid, all he's done in his brief career is he's tossed over 300 innings, and his ERA is right around 3.6, which is pretty damn good. I mean, I feel like if he would have been a first round pick and had come up at that age of 22 and had put up those numbers the first, you know, 2+ years, we'd be raving about him even more, and there'd be even more talk about him around Major League Baseball. But you could see the promise. You could see when he's on how good he could possibly be, and he just deserves to be mentioned because I just feel like we talk about, Duffy's the veteran, and, they're just trying to get the most out of him before his contract's up, and, everyone loves Duffy, and he's a good guy to have in the clubhouse and everything else. And then you got Keller and Junis, and then people are ready to push them aside when this next wave of starting pitching comes up. And I don't know about Junis. You know, I'm still hopeful that Junis can continue to get better. But Keller needs to be talked about as part of the solution. And a guy that I don't know if anyone's going to come up and push him out of the rotation. And so it was very, very exciting, and I was very happy to watch Brad Keller and how effective he pitched last night. And maybe just a bit underrated for what he's done so far in his brief career and how he looks right now, because it looks like he's ready to take a nice step forward in his third season with the Royals. Nate Buchady.
As Dame Lillard would say, you need to put some respect on that man's name. So I'm glad you put some respect on Brad Keller's name. Yeah, that was a really good performance last night. And, had it the whole way, right? I mean, it was a little dicey there at the end, but, and that was a really good turn by Nicky Lopez. I know you've been putting some respect on that man's name as well, And Nicky Lopez with that turn at the on the double play to end the game was really impressive. But you're right about Brad Keller. I mean, and you don't have to dream that much to envision a good pitching staff for this Royals team going forward. You can really start to see some of these pieces coming together, and Brad Keller's definitely one of them, no doubt about it.
And also Josh Staalmont, look, that's you want him to come in and just have a clean inning and not have any stress, add any stress to the game, but that's saying something too, where he put himself in a tough situation with runners on, and he was able to, and that's the great thing about a guy like Josh Staalmont, get strikeouts when you need it, get strikeouts when you got runners on base. Look, Rosenthal too. I mean, that was I did. At the very least, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to tie the game, and here we go with freaking inning, extra innings again. But he gets the double play and avoids blowing the game after walking the bases loaded. And so, was it easy? No. But again, the Royals bullpen able to lock it down. It would have been a shame to waste, an absolute shame to waste that performance from Brad Keller, which leaves us with Ian Kennedy. He doesn't look good right now.
Mm-mm.
And they probably need to reconsider how they're using him, because that if the game would have been lost last night, the blame would have, the fingers would have been pointed at, look, they're not going to point fingers, but it would have been because Ian Kennedy didn't come in, or came in and wasn't able to record an out, right?
Yeah,
he has to be better, or they have to start to utilize him in some lower leverage situations.
Yeah, and disappointing because he pitched so well in the bullpen last year. But on the positive side, a lot of these other guys, like Staalmont and Barlow and Rosenthal, despite his tightrope walk last night, I mean, those guys have been good. But and hopefully Kennedy gets it together here. But at least they're not relying on him to close this year. And so that's a positive. But, he's really struggled.
And so the Royals get the win last night, and... that's the other thing with Keller's return and when Junis got healthy, that we talked about having some optimism despite their slow start, because now the rotation is solidified, and I get it. Most major league teams don't have to worry about that, that can throw money at the problem or whatever. But throughout our lives of watching Royals teams, and especially bad Royals teams, it's been a luxury in the last couple of decades when they could have a rotation where there wasn't some big hole in it, or just a pitcher or them trying to piecemeal things together, where you'd look a night or two out of the week and say, well, they have no chance to win a night, or I don't want to watch this. This guy's going to get bombed. And they had that a couple of times earlier in the season when they went with bullpen days. But that's not the case now. Every night you feel pretty damn good about the guy that's going to be on the mound, whether it's Duffy or Keller or Junis or one of the two young studs and Brady Singer and Chris Bubich. And that's, I think, one of the more exciting things about watching the Royals this year. You feel at least pretty damn good about every starting pitcher at some level that they put out there. And so... hopefully the Royals can take advantage of an opportunity to get another win in Cincinnati. And hopefully the home plate umpire's finger won't be mangled tonight.
Huh.
Were you watching that?
Man. That wasn't...
I wanted to see exactly what it had. It took forever, and the guy that was out there trying to work on the finger would... I'm the opposite. You don't like to see these injuries. I want to see what the hell happened.
Right.
I mean, did it rip his nail off? Like, what was them? I mean, there was a lot of blood there. Oh, that looked so painful when they did show it in the instant replay.
He did end up with a broken finger. I don't know what else he ended up with. And there's different types of broken fingers, right?
Right. But there was a lot of blood.
Yeah.
So it's just more than just a broken
yeah.
finger. I mean, I want to know. Didn't want to see a close up of that?
No, thank you.
As possible with a high def camera?
No, thank you. My
yes.
I don't need that.
Yes.
Hey, and credit
Why
to
not?
Brad Keller. That was a 17-minute delay right in the first inning. to bounce, you know, because that can mess you up.
Because I didn't know what was going on. Like, what are they doing to him back there? Are they stitching him up? Is he, forever.
Maybe like that guy we talked about had the surgery the other day. They were attaching something to his arm. You never know.
I loved it. Just the anticipation of what was happening, but they kept showing I didn't love that he got hurt. I wish it would have happened the night before, but I digress.
Rough series for the home plate umpires.
Yeah, right after that, that should have been a walk, and he called the strike. You know, I don't wish anyone to get hurt.
No.
Maybe after that bad call, just a foul tip off the ground right into his balls, maybe.
Oh.
Get him out of the game. Get him out of the game briefly. Someone that can actually call balls and strikes. Did you watch that, Jake? You've had a lot of finger injuries.
Oh yeah, that was disgusting.
That upset you, or?
Well, the blood is what troubles me. I mean, I've had a lot of hand injuries, but I've never really had a open wound on my hands from the injury. It's been like, you know, dislocations and broken digits and big phalanges that get injured. But
right.
But the blood was like, hey. Hey-o. No, thank you.
Did you hear what Rex said they should have done? Get an aspirin and tape it on there. Like Rex, I don't know if that's going to help if you put the aspirin directly on the wound and just tape it on there.
Does it work that way?
No.
Soak it into the skin?
If I had something hurt me and she'd give me like an aspirin or something, or you know the chewable, remember the chewable aspirin when we were kids that didn't taste so bad, and she would. So if I had a headache, she'd take the aspirin. But hear me, hold on. She'd rub it on my forehead. She goes, tell the aspirin what hurts, and then you know, okay. And I'd rub it on my forehead because then if I rub the aspirin on my forehead, then the aspirin will know he's got a headache. You know?
That's right. Like Chris Rock said, you pour some Robitussin on there.
I'm thinking back on that. It seems like she might have been lying to me. That doesn't sound.
Hey, did it make you feel better?
Plausible now. Yeah, but
then it doesn't really matter.
Maybe it did. Jake, did anyone ever do that with you? Rub the aspirin on your.
No, I've dissolved ibuprofen into my knee though.
Okay.
Go on.
I was just. Dissolved it in my knee. I had some DSO. It's it's a painkiller.
Like, don't be throwing these things out there like we know what the hell you're talking about. What?
Give us
a little background on this. Come on, it's early in the morning.
I was playing on a torn meniscus, and we had a tournament down in Florida, and I was the third string goalie. But by the end of the year, we had worked our way through. Through two other goalies, and I had taken the starting spot. And
yes.
And so we traveled down to Florida for the last two games of the year and without a backup goalkeeper because you could only travel 18, and the coach wanted to travel. So then I banged my knee up pretty good in the first match, and then the second match, they're like, you don't have much of a choice. You got to go out there and at least stand in front of the goal. And so... He provided me with some DSO, which is a horse painkiller, but it's a liquid. And so what you do is you dissolve the liquid. You basically dissolve an ibuprofen into your knee with the DSO.
So, see, it does work.
It did. I mean, I lost in double overtime to Florida International. It was a painful game.
In more ways than one, it sounds like.
No,
Was that NCAA approved?
You know, it was loose regulations back then.
They have the same protocols they do now, huh?
No.
You're going to point to the loose regulations there. So that
I'm point to... We only got drug tested before the NCAA tournament. So did it work? I don't know if it worked. I played the full game. I was in a lot of pain. I mean, it was the last...
I mean, did it provide you with some relief?
Yeah, I mean, I tried about everything. I took some Vicodin as well.
So you don't know what... helped you?
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be honest, playing
darts at the dartboard.
Playing soccer on Vicodin is really hard.
We got a question from Matt Beasley at 805. Hey, Matt, what's it like to play
I mean, I'd imagine any sport on a painkiller like that is really hard. But I only have the experience of playing soccer on Vicodin. I mean, I had a prescription. I wasn't taking it illegally, by the way. When I say that, I was taking it. I wasn't just loosely taking
it. No one's accusing you.
I know.
I'm not, you know.
Well, it sounds, you know.
You're not under cross-examination. You're not, you know.
I had a prescription for it. I had a serious knee injury.
Did the prescription encourage you to take it while playing athletics?
I think it was as needed, you know, for the pain.
Yes. Nate, I don't think the bottle said we, encourage while playing athletics.
Do not operate heavy machinery or play soccer.
But if you could play soccer, it would be great.
Best when used while playing soccer.
Yeah.
I would have guessed it wasn't
most effective.
Right.
I took a lot of focus that day, but my knee didn't hurt.
There you go.
So I guess it worked.
People. We give you real experience that we compare things to.
Hashtag real talk.
That's right.
So you're saying if you would have been the ump, would you have been back out there quicker?
Yeah, I would have said, hey, give me some DSL. Let's rub some ibuprofen on this. Give me a Vicodin. Let's go.
Boy, this umpire strike zone is really inconsistent today.
Yeah. Now the home plate umpire is actually facing away from the plate. He's got his back turned and...
Well, he called three strikes while both teams were in the dugout between innings.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Yes. Right. So hopefully the ump's finger's fine. That did not look good. But you're right, man. Brad Keller, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to get iced now. He's nice and all warmed up and ready to go and hot. He was hot. And then he had to sit for, it was 17 minutes.
I read.
Yeah. I mean, we were sitting there watching this taking forever. I'm thinking, what are they? Are they operating on his finger right now? If so, let's get a camera back there. I mean, you've got the opportunity to do this. You've got the technology. Let's see what's happening right now with the ump's finger. But the Royals win. That's all you need to know. And they take care of business against the Cincinnati Reds. And we're all good now, right? All good in this hood. As the next game up for your Kansas City Royals will be on Friday. Freaky Friday. Against the Minnesota Twins, and I'm okay with that. They recently had some success. Am I right? This time they'll be at Minnesota, and the pitching matchup will be Jacob Junis and Jake Odorizzi. We'll take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
They're like little baseball bats. And so I said, I will not let you do surgery on me. There's no way with those big phalanges that you're going to get inside of me.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Today on the show, we have several guests. We are packed, starting with Royals assistant GM J.J. Piccolo at 7:30. Gary Lezak with your forecast after that. Sporting Kansas City captain Matt Beisler at 8:05. Our college football insider. The coach, Gary Barnett, at 8:30, he'll have plenty to say about the Pac-12 postponing their football season. Of course, Gary Barnett, color commentator for Colorado football, former head coach at Colorado, and was a head coach in the Big Ten with Northwestern. And so, really looking forward to hearing Gary Barnett and his perspective on things that are happening in college football right now. And then in 9 o'clock, Tim Grunhard will be on the show with us for a full hour. So we'll go baseball, weather, soccer, and then go heavy on football for you between 7:30 and 10 o'clock. We have a wonderful young man by the name of Todd Lebo who put together some sound yesterday as many people spoke. And Jake, I'd like to reprimand you on something. I was ready here, sitting excitedly, anticipating the show to start, and then you play the intro, and then I heard Bob Bowlsby's voice, and I actually fell asleep and fell out of my chair for 3 minutes. And so please don't do that again, because then you have to restart your engine. You know what I mean? Then I'm like, all right, let's go. Time to start the show. And I think that... Right. You know, next time I have trouble sleeping, though, I'm going to play Bob Bowlsby's, like, a press conference. Because sometimes I'll play, like, sounds of the ocean or rain against the window. I have that Calm app for meditation that I try to utilize. See, Jake, I'm learning. They should have a Bowlsby app. You just play, like, random comments from him.
I have never thought that preemptively moving to the spring made a lot of sense. First of all, we hadn't been told that we couldn't in the
what
fall.
What did I just tell you?
And we wanted to move to, as I said, to mid-August. To
Nate,
see
are you
what
there?
The experience was.
Or is this
I'm
just
here.
A dream?
Beyond that,
hello,
think
Nate.
Back to what March, April, and May were like in our country last year. It's the tail end of the virus season.
Damn
and,
you!
I don't think there's.
How about let's hear from Gene Taylor, the K-State AD. How about that? I'd like to hear from Gene Taylor. Is that okay with you, Nate?
Sure. I don't know. I was catching up on some Z's there. A tough night sleeping last night, but that's okay.
Oh, did you?
If you want me to be awake for the show, fine. Mm-hmm. Fine. Have it your way.
So Gene Taylor spoke yesterday. Also, Mizzou head football coach Eli Drinkwitz. He will never put you to sleep in a press conference. He says all kinds of things.
Well, I liked it. Yes, I got a lot of cruds out of him yesterday. Crud, yeah, man.
Right.
I like that.
We'll hear some Gene Taylor and some Eli Drinkwitz and maybe sprinkling some Bob Bowlsby after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's hear from K-State GM AD, Gene Taylor. Here, Gene Taylor says the past few days have been stressful for all parties involved in the big decision.
Yeah, there were several. I'll be honest with you. You know, when the Big Ten and the Pac-12 came out, it was feeling pretty ominous that we weren't going to have football. There were a few of us that were pretty strong that we wanted to do everything we could. There were other ADs that, you know, just started to think, is this really what we needed to do? And then that's why the call yesterday, I think, was so helpful with everybody, was because of the numbers of really talented and smart cardiologists and folks that kind of helped us through our ability to play safely for athletes if we did these additional protocols. And I think by the end of the call last night, most people were feeling pretty good about it and felt that we were making the best decision. And I think that's what it came down to, is this the best decision for the Big 12 and our student athletes? And are we giving them enough information where they feel like they can walk out on the field every day and be safe? And again, if something changes, we have the ability to pivot and not continue to move forward. But right now, we're pretty excited about being able to get to this point.
Here, Gene Taylor says the Big Ten and Pac-12 decision certainly had an impact.
But I think there was perceived pressure that if those two conferences, we were going to have to make that decision. And that's one of the things we talked about, is we can't necessarily worry about how they came to their decision, because there are different circumstances in the Pac-12, for instance. The city of LA and those areas are much more positive cases. They have much more issues to deal with. The Big Ten, they've got Rutgers and Maryland out on the East Coast that have some additional issues. So we said, what's best for us? Whatever decision we make needs to be what's best for the Big 12, and not worry about what the Big Ten, because they came to their decision for different reasons than we did. And so we felt pretty confident that we had to make a decision on, for our student athletes, our coaches, our programs, to decide what's the best for the Big 12. And when we got there, then we worked through the process from that point.
I know Commissioner Bowlsby had just mentioned non-conference teams will be subject to the same level of testing that you guys have. Is that something you guys will have to pay for in the case of Arkansas State?
Well, that's a good question. And we actually talked to Arkansas State this morning, and they had planned on doing a test because that's what was in the NCAA protocols. But we told them now, we sent them our contract, we actually said they would need to follow the Big 12 protocols of testing. And that's now changed from 1 to 3. And we offered to help them with that if they so desired. And I think we probably will for the additional 2 tests, just because we want to get that 10th game. The other thing is our athletes want to know that they're tested, right? They want to know that they're coming in negative. And so, again, that commitment to our student athletes to be safe, that if we had to pay for those extra 2 tests, then we would be happy to.
That's Gene Taylor. We'll play some more comments from him in the 7 o'clock hour. Nate, any comments on what Gene Taylor had to say?
Well, I would still like to hear more about these decisions being made, because we've heard from both Bob Bowlsby and Gene Taylor now about how, well, they're dealing with different set of circumstances in the Pac-12 than they are in the Big 12, and they kept referring to the state of California. I'm looking at the CDC website right now, and the state of Texas, according to the CDC.gov website, state of Texas has more cases per 1,000 and more deaths per 1,000 than California does. They're listed as the 2 biggest hotspots in the country on here. And along with Florida, of course. So I'd be interested to hear why. I mean, aren't there a lot of schools in Texas in the Big 12? And I'm not saying they're making the wrong decision. I don't know what the right decision is on any of this, but if that's going to be the rationale, that seems inconsistent to me. But I'd be interested to hear why that, if you're going to use California as an example of why the Pac-12 would shut down, well, they're dealing with different circumstances. According to the CDC website, Texas is dealing with it even worse than California is. And a large portion of your schools are there. So I don't know.
Kansas State added a September 12th home game with Arkansas State, and that's what Gene Taylor was talking about. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's hear a couple of clips from Mizzou head football coach Eli Drinkwitz, who spoke with the media yesterday. Here, Coach Drinkwitz says his football program has done a great job following their protocols.
Through mandated testing, surveillance testing, symptom testing throughout our program, we are less than a 3% positivity rate for COVID-19 within our team. The state of Missouri currently on a 7-day average is at 11.9%, and Boone County is currently at a 9%. So we are well below both local and state positivity rates. And that's a tribute to both our players, our staff. And I'm not bragging about that. Obviously, knock on wood, you know, New Zealand was bragging about 100 days, and that didn't turn out real well for them. So I'm not bragging. I do want just the information and accurate information to be out there about our program and about what we're going through, and that is information that we felt comfortable releasing.
Here is some more from Eli Drinkwitz. He was asked if he's concerned that the medical advice some leagues have gotten to lead them to shut down, is he concerned that the SEC's experts are saying things that are different?
No. I trust my doctors. I trust MU Health. I think, you know, when you're talking about doctors, I mean, we've all gotten second opinions on things. You know, if somebody goes to this doctor and doesn't like that opinion or wants a different form of treatment, they go to another one. That's actually very common from what I understand about medicine. You know, you can get different doctors to do different surgeries on any type of thing. You've got different doctors who treat different diseases. Again, I think Dr. Witt's one of the best in the world. And I know he's one of the best in the state of Missouri. I feel very confident in the information. You know, I've been on calls with leading epidemiologists in the country. I've been on calls with leading cardiologists in the country. I've been on calls with local doctors who I feel very confident in the information that we've gotten. I feel very confident in our plan. I feel very comfortable with the way that we're doing our testing, tracing. I feel very comfortable with the information we're putting. Look, nothing in life is zero risk. Nothing in life is zero risk.
Here's more from Eli Drinkwitz. He was asked about concerns of having other students returning to campus.
You can attack this thing one of two ways. You can be fear of all the unknowns, or you can do control what you can control, which is practice safe social distancing, wear a mask, wash your hands, don't put yourself in gatherings of large indoor gatherings, and monitor who you're surrounded by. And if you do that, then you should be, that's as much protection as you can give. You can't control everybody else. And so that's my message to our team. Has been the same message that as we continue to learn more information is you control what you can control. You know, if you go out to said local establishments, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus on Friday night, then you're going to put your team, yourself and our team in jeopardy. But if you can avoid those places, then you got an opportunity to be successful.
That was Eli Drinkwitz. We'll hear some more from Eli Drinkwitz coming up. And again, we have a good show planned for you. J.J. Piccolo at 7:30, then Gary Lezak with your forecast. Matt Beasler will be on the show at 8:05. I know that Nate is always very excited. We all are always very excited to hear from Matt Beasler, so we'll hear from Matt a little bit later. Gary Barnett, our college football insider, at 8:30. And then Tim Grunhard will be on the show in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll be right back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Thank you for watching us on 38 The Spot. The show continues right now. We'll hear some more sound from Nate wants to play Bob Bowlesby, so we'll do that. Some more Drinkwitz. Then we will have J.J. Piccolo on the show to talk about that nice win for the Royals last night. All that and more coming up next, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.